Good morning. We thank you for tuning into our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ here in Bowling Green. We encourage you to come and meet with us today if possible. We meet at the building located at 125 Hilltopper Avenue each Sunday morning at 9 o'clock for Bible classes. Then we have our worship services together at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings and 6 o'clock Sunday evenings. In these worship services, we conduct the acts of worship that you can read about in your New Testament. Simple acts of worship. We engage in Bible teaching, preaching, prayer, things you read about, the Lord's Supper, giving, if it's the a first day of the week assembly, like on Sunday, which is what Sunday is, the first day of the week. The Bible talks about that in Acts chapter 20 and verse 7 and 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 2 regarding giving. And so we read about these things, and these are the things that we do in our worship services. We engage in simple singing. Some people accuse us of not believing in or practicing music. Well, it is music. It's just vocal music. That is what is stipulated. That is what is explicitly taught in the New Testament for us to engage in worship to God. And so that's what we do. And you can read about these things in your Bible, and that's what we try to do. Now, if you find something that you believe that we're doing that you believe is not consistent with what the Bible teaches, we'll be happy to study that with you and consider everything that the Bible has to say on it. Maybe passages that we think of, maybe passages that you think of. But we're interested in looking at whatever the Bible has to say on that subject. So feel free to bring anything like that to our attention. The same goes for what we teach on the radio. We are not infallible. We are fallible. We are capable of being wrong. We're capable of reaching faulty conclusions, or we're capable of failing to consider all that is said by God on a subject, and maybe just need to have something brought to our attention, something pointed out that we've overlooked in the past. And whatever the reason may be, we're capable of being mistaken, and so that's why we extend this offer, this invitation. And we'll be happy to sit down with you and consider these things. Now, if you prefer to call us or you prefer to write us, to use email, we'll be happy to correspond with you that way. You can email us by going to the Parkway Church of Christ website, parkwaychurchofchrist.com, and find the email form there and email us. And you can also call us at area code 270-842-2049. I want this morning to consider some reflections that we might make upon on an article that I read this week about an oncologist who got very interested, who was an oncologist who got very interested in the afterlife because of so many stories that he heard of people who left consciousness and then came back. We all know books have been written on this, many stories have been told, but anyway, he researched it and found 5,000 cases, and he read all of the stories on all of them, and he reached the conclusion that there was an afterlife based upon all of this, basically what he considered to be eyewitness testimony. Now, I realize that there are some, of course, nuances to that that we would need to consider. I realize that over in Hebrews chapter 9, the Hebrew writer said, "As it is appointed unto men once to die, but after this the judgment." And so sometimes people talk about coming back from death, and it becomes then language that maybe needs to be taken into consideration and balanced with Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 27, that is, to meet the biblical definition of death. The biblical, where I'm going with this, is this. In James chapter 2, in your Bible, while James is actually discussing the subject of the interaction, the connection between faith and obedient works, not just any works. These works in James 2, friends, can't be the works of the flesh of Galatians 5. They can't be the works of the law of Moses of Galatians chapters 2 and 3. They can't be the works of righteousness which we have done of Titus 3 and verse 5, can they? So what kind of works are they? Well, if you study the character studies of the people and the history of the people that are mentioned, like Rahab the harlot or of Abraham, and other parallels, you'll conclude that these works of James chapter 2 that must accompany faith, are works of simple, humble obedience to God. By the way, obedience to God regardless of what law you may be living under. You're living under what we sometimes call patriarchal law, or a moral system or moral code that was handed down by the heads of households and then spread throughout the populations, like Rahab would have been under, or if you're reading about, or Abraham, or if you're reading about other examples of faith, even under the law of Moses, you're reading about examples of simple obedience to God. And so James 2 is talking about that. But incidental to that topic, he uses the body and the spirit and the definition of death here to illustrate his point. After saying likewise also, verse 25 of James chapter 2, likewise also was not Rahab the harlot justified by works, when she had received the messengers and sent them out another way. In other words, she helped the people of God, the faithful people of God. Okay? That's a work, a good work. It says, for as, verse 26, I want you to notice this. Verse 26, for as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. So we have to remember the biblical, when we think of Hebrews 9:27, and as it is appointed unto men once to die, and after this the judgment, that's that verse, you hear that at funerals a lot. We have to consider in connection with that a passage like James 2 and verse 26. What is the definition of death? Death is separation. There is in the Bible spiritual death, people being dead in trespasses and sins, like in Ephesians 2:1. Or death in the sense of the separation, and in that death, that separation from God, spiritual death. But then there's physical death. And what is that separation? Well, in physical death, there's still a separation. But the separation is the separation of the physical body from the spirit, from the spiritual person, the spirit being the consciousness, we sometimes call it. And so there's a separation between those two. And he says that's when someone is dead. So in analyzing some of these stories and some of these cases, we might reach the conclusion that they had not actually died. That is, per the biblical definition. But I'm unconcerned about that running debate about that and about the language that's used and definitions that are used, because the man was right in his conclusion. People do have some interesting stories and details, and some of them overlap. And some of these have come from children, very young children who had what's called near-death experiences and reported seeing some of the same things that others have seen, which means that this couldn't have been acquired by mere cultural contagion, by hearing stories over and over about it all their lives. They're only 5 years old. Some of these kids were only 5 years old, so they couldn't have been indoctrinated into some verbiage, some language that had been basically hijacked by people from other people. They couldn't have been in that classification. They couldn't have learned it that way. But it made me think of the simple, plain language of the Bible. And I want you to think about that. And you can go back in the Old Testament and read interesting things about departed spirits. I think, to me, well, we don't have time to read all of it this morning, but One of the more interesting stories like this is over in 1 Samuel chapter 28, where you had Saul. He's in all kinds of trouble. He's disobeyed God. He's not listening to God, so God is not sending prophets to him, and he didn't have any word from the Lord, and so he got what he thought desperate. And even though he had banished all mediums and witches from the land, he did find this woman. He found a woman in Endor, a witch, and he asked her to bring someone from the dead for him. And then she was concerned because, of course, she knew this had been banned, been outlawed. And he persuaded her that nothing would happen, no harm will come to you if you'll go ahead and do this for me. Of course, now we know that the witch had no native, intrinsic, special powers of sorcery to bring up dead people from the grave. We know what was going on here. What actually happened was that Samuel gave Saul a message from the Lord. But the woman was told, "Who do you want me to raise up?" And Saul said, "I want you to raise for me Samuel." And that was really disconcerting to her. And then she thought, "Uh-oh, I've been deceived. Who are you?" And well, he's Saul. So she figured all of this out. And but the fascinating thing about the story in 1 Samuel 28 is that God accommodated all of this. He allowed Samuel to be brought up from the grave, from what we sometimes call the intermediate state of the dead. The New Testament calls it the place of Hades, and I always have to define this because any given Sunday, there could be different people listening, and maybe you've never heard me comment on Hades. According to Luke chapter 16, Hades is a place where departed spirits go until the resurrection, until the changed body phase of our existence. And they are there. They're housed in Hades, but Hades, some people think of the word Hades as implying punishment, like it's hell. Hades is not hell. Hades is simply the realm of the unseen. It's the place of the dead. It's the place of departed spirits. But according to Luke 16, it is divided. There is, as Abraham described, a great gulf fixed between the side where there is pain and torment, what we sometimes call torments, because of the testimonies that were given about what the rich man was going through there in Luke 16. He was tormented in the flame. But then there was another compartment of it where was Lazarus. And the interesting thing about that is that he was comforted there. The rich man was tormented for his lack of concern for others, his failure to serve God and love his fellow man. So he's being punished. He's in the torment side of Hades. But Lazarus is in the other side. Now, what else is that other side called other than the place of comfort? Well, it's called paradise. Jesus told the thief on the cross, "Today you will be with me in paradise," in Luke chapter 23. So that's another term for that. It means the same thing. It's describing the same place. Incidentally, when Jesus died, he said, "Today you will be with me," told the thief, the penitent thief, not the others. He told the He told the penitent thief, "Today you will be with me in paradise." Where did Jesus go when he died, friends? He did go into Hades, but he went into a specific compartment of Hades. He did go to the realm of the dead, departed spirits, but he went into the specific compartment of it called paradise. We know that because that's what he said he was doing. That's what he said he was doing. And a lot of people will read Acts chapter 2, "You will not leave my soul in hell," and they assume that that's talking about Gehenna, eternal hellfire place. No, Jesus never went there. Jesus didn't go there. He said he was going to paradise. You have to interpret the Acts 2:27 passage in light of the Luke 23 and Luke 16 passages, friends. But anyway, we know that there's a place of departed spirits, and that's where Samuel had gone. And since he was a servant of God and still speaking on behalf of God, we infer that he also went to the paradise side of Hades, of the place, the realm of the departed spirits. Not the punitive side, but on the reward side. So what didn't he do again? He told Saul, he said, Saul, now we know why God's not helping you or listening to you, because he is punishing you for what you failed to do with regard to the Amalekites. He reminded him of that. You can read about that back earlier in 1 Samuel chapter 15. So Samuel reminds him of what he had already told him before, and then he tells him something else. And this is fascinating. He said, by the way, by this time tomorrow, you and your son will be here with me. And that's an interesting observation. And really, and of course, Saul just fell to the ground when he heard this news. He would die in battle. The story, of course, it revolves around this fascinating scene of Samuel being, his spirit, being pulled out of, taken out of Hades, and him being able to communicate with someone on the earth. So, you know, to Bible readers, the idea of life after death is not strange at all. But I want to remind you of something that Jesus taught about this. Jesus talked about life after death quite frequently. For example, in Matthew chapter 22, in the debate chapter, where you have those three different groups that approach Jesus, and they had their different peculiar arguments that they made. You know, one about the tribute money, and that was the Herodians. And then you had the Sadducees come, and they have this story about what Moses had to say about the Levirate law, about a woman marrying a man and them having no children and her marrying his brother. And then they go on to talk about, in verse 25 of Matthew 22, if you're reading along, talking about the situation where this woman did this seven times. Married seven successive brothers here. And their big thing was they thought that they had a great argument, you know. That's the way people do that don't read the Bible. Jesus told them later, you err because you don't know the Scriptures. And that's always the problem. You know, it could be people don't know the Scriptures or they don't care what the Scriptures say. And Jesus covered both of that when he said, not knowing the Scriptures nor God's power. In other words, they don't appreciate the sovereignty of God. If God speaks, you better think about what he's saying. But anyway, they came up with this argument. They thought they really had Jesus. And Jesus said, and so their question was, now in the resurrection, whose will she be for all seven had her? Whose wife of the seven will she be in the resurrection? Since they denied the resurrection, they thought they really had an argument here. Jesus said, you err not knowing the Scriptures nor the power of God. And then he said, for in the resurrection they neither marry nor are given in marriage. Friends, there won't be any marriages in heaven. The relationships change. There is no physical existence there. There won't be any marriage there. There won't be any marriages there. For in the resurrection they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like the angels in heaven. Angels are not married and don't marry. Have you not read what God said concerning the resurrection of the dead? Now, what did God say about the resurrection of the... What did he say about life after death? Samuel was alive after his death. What did the Scriptures say about life after death, the resurrection? God said, I am the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob. Well, wait a minute. When that statement was made, those men were dead. How could you say that? What would you conclude from that? Jesus necessarily inferred. By the way, some people say there's no such thing as necessary inference. Well, Jesus used it all of the time. He used it in Matthew chapter 19. After quoting Genesis 2:24 regarding marriage, you remember what he did? He talked about a man leaving his father and mother and cleaving to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Wherefore, they are no more two, but one flesh. And what did he conclude from that? He's not still quoting from Genesis 2:24 in Matthew 19, verse 6. What did he conclude? What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. That's a necessary inference. God did it, and so man is not authorized to undo it. And he went on to teach only one exception for divorce and remarriage in verse 9. Only one. Sexual immorality. If one's mate is sexually unfaithful, then the innocent spouse can put them away, divorce them, we would use in our modern language today, but that's not the word Jesus used, but to put away, they can put them away, repudiate them, and have the right to marry another person. So necessary inference. But what is taught in Matthew 22? About life after death, about the afterlife. Well, what is taught is that it happens, that it is a reality, that people have died who still exist. Now, their spirits still exist. And the fascinating thing is the Bible teaches that their spirits will never cease to exist. You may have heard, there are popular people that get a little soft, I think, sometimes in their approach to scriptures, and they just can't stand the thought that a loving God would punish someone forever for their sin, for their rebellion. Now, they might be able to accept this idea that God could punish someone for a little while, long as it's over real quick in their minds. Well, no. What I learned from Scripture about the smoke of their torment rising up forever and ever, and language like this, these shall go away into everlasting punishment, Matthew 25 and verse 46, verses like that. What I learned from passages like that is that God takes sin very seriously. God takes service to Him, man's service to Him very seriously. He takes man's responsibility to obey Him very seriously. That's what we learn from that. We don't have to speculate about that because we read many times in the Bible, and even from the mouth of Jesus, the words that are recorded that Jesus said, even from Jesus we learn that that is the nature of God. Oh, yes, He will. He is fully prepared to punish for eternity those who in this life refuse Him. It makes us appreciate the seriousness of sin and the seriousness of God. It makes us appreciate the nature of God. So what did Jesus teach in Matthew 22 and verse 32? He taught the afterlife. He taught the afterlife. And you notice a couple of chapters later, over in Matthew 25, he's going to talk about this again. He talks about it when he talks about the coming judgment. And two possibilities, and there are no others. The folks are always trying to invent a third or fourth option. Jesus gave only two possibilities. He talked about, on the one hand, those who had served Him, those who are classified as the sheep. Why sheep? Because they were followers. They heard the voice of God or the voice of Christ. They heard the voice of the shepherd, and they followed. That's like in John chapter 10, and on and off through much of that chapter, John chapter 10. On and off, the discussion of the sheep and the shepherd, and the good shepherd there. Well, so here we have people all gathered together. They're separated from as one divides the sheep from the goats in verse 33. And verse 34 says, "Then the king will say to those on his right hand, 'Come, blessed ones of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world.'" Now, that's what every sane-minded person wants to hear in that time. Because he's talking about a point in time after earth. He's talking about outside of the flesh, fleshly body. He's talking about away from a material, physical existence. He's talking about preparation for eternity here in the judgment day, where the sentencing will happen. Later in verse 41, he will say to those on the left hand, the goats, "Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels." And then he gives the reasons. He's talking about afterlife. And then it's all summarized in verse 46. "These will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal," or everlasting life. It's actually the same Greek word, everlasting and everlasting. So the duration is identical. Some people want to believe, in order to make themselves feel better about those who are lost, they want to believe that heaven will be forever, that the reward side, the life side, will be forever, everlasting. But that the punishment side will be only for a moment and over in an instant. They believe in what's called annihilationism. Jesus did not teach the annihilation doctrine here. He taught that the punishment and the reward were both equal and opposite. They were equal in their duration and they were opposite in their nature. But the duration is the same. Both are eternal. Both will last forever. The Bible talks about afterlife. Now, we need to strongly consider that. Sometimes scientists will debate things about human nature. And, you know, that part of it's called the consciousness is just something that they have trouble scientifically explaining. Our capacity for love, our reactions emotionally, what all does that come from? A part of us that extends beyond just the physical, just the matter part. And what that is talked about all through the Bible. It is the soul. It is the spirit. Sometimes those words are used interchangeably and sometimes they are used differently. Soul and spirit, psuche and pneuma, two different Greek words. But when they're used interchangeably, they're talking about the eternal aspect of a human, the part that will last forever. Over in 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, Paul talked about this. He talked about the reward for those who were looking forward to the coming of Christ. And of course, that describes the end. The earth will be destroyed. According to 2 Peter chapter 3, it will be burned up. The elements will melt with fervent heat. But then there's sadly another side to this. There's eternity for someone else. Paul said, "Indeed, it is right for God to repay trouble to those who are troubling you, and provide relief to you along with us who are troubled. When the Lord is revealed from heaven with the angels in his power and flaming fire, he will punish those who do not know God and who do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. They will suffer eternal ruin and exclusion from the Lord's face and from the splendor of his might." That's because there's an afterlife. And we need to be prepared for that. We're out of time this morning for the radio. We thank you for listening. Hope you'll think on these things and do what you need to do to prepare yourself. We hope you'll tune in for our study next week. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.